Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Glad you could listen today. During this hour of the show, we will talk about home energy and something we like to do on the show every once in a while, a very practical-oriented program, your questions about both saving your energy dollars and making your home more comfortable. That's the idea of this. Larry Lister is our guest. He's an engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering. And he's seen just about every heating and ventilation and air conditioning problem you can possibly throw at him. So we'll talk with Larry about some general issues about how do you make your home more comfortable while also saving energy dollars during this hour. If you'd like to join our conversation, all you have to do is pick up the telephone and call us. The number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if that makes it easier to remember. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest, if you're listening on the air, or if you're listening online anywhere in the continental U.S., the toll-free line, 800-222-9455. Anytime during this hour, your questions are welcome. Larry Lister, good morning.
What up?
Hey, good to see you again. Thanks for being here.
That's what the kids say, isn't it? Can we say that on public radio?
I'm not sure. I think so.
All right.
It's not one of the seven verboten words.
No,
and yet.
It's Friday.
It is indeed. So I was very happy to see my energy bill last month was unbelievably, it was like $110, which it doesn't get to very often in the year, which might make me go, well, you know, why should I worry about the summer air conditioning season because my energy bill is so low now? But maybe we're at a time when I should be thinking about summer air conditioning season.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a lot of that out there right now. So everybody, luckily, we've had a great spring. It's been great. Unless, it's funny, though. I just over the last two or three days, I'm riding my bike around town and when you do that, you're not locked up in your car. You're able to experience what's going on around you a little more. And I'm hearing all these air conditioners running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm driving around with a long sleeve on my bike with a long sleeve shirt on, half shivering, and there's all these people running their air conditioners. And my neighbor this morning, I walked out the house to walk over here, and the neighbor house has got the air conditioners going. I go, what's going on here? It's gorgeous outside. Open your windows. Enjoy it. So.
Could there be an air quality issue that they're trying to prevent pollen from getting in their house? Oh. Wouldn't that be legitimate?
Well, sure. There are folks with those kind of issues,
mm-hmm.
and you know that can be legitimate. I don't know if that's a situation right now or not. It could be, but you know there. I just talked to so many people who, and this house next door, by the way, is a fairly new house next door to me,
right.
And so they've got windows that work.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them work.
Mm-hmm.
Just not very often. No, you know what it is that I think, you know, societally we've gotten into this thing where everybody wants to just control everything around them, you know, and that goes from your environment and your temperature and thermal comfort to your spouse and children and televisions. And, you know, if we had a remote for everything, I think, you know, life would be good. But
one remote for everything.
One remote for everything, the universal remote. But, yeah, we don't. But, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, we live in this climate where in the middle of the summer it can be fairly oppressive with humidity,
mm-hmm.
and so
oh,
forth.
Yeah.
And in the middle of winter, you know, yeah, it can be tough too. But we have a lot of hours of the year where life is pretty good,
mm-hmm.
temperature-wise.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's do something with that and open the house up if you can. Some of us have our windows sealed shut because they're 100-year-old houses and they're, you know, they haven't been opened in 30 or 40 years, so you might be stuck with it. But, you know, why throw electricity at some of these problems when you know, the outdoor environment can do a pretty good job? And a lot of these houses, frankly, you walk into people's houses that don't open their windows, and a lot of times, you know, you're smelling last week's salmon and, and everything else. Open it up, and people just get used to setting this thermostat and being done with it. And of course, our commercial environment doesn't help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we build these, you know, hermetically sealed buildings. We don't even put operable windows in buildings
right.
anymore, in commercial buildings. So most of us go to work in some building, and we're used to having a stat on the wall 24/7 year round. So we go home and we do the same thing. And a lot of folks that I talk to, and I mention this, it's really funny, is that a lot of people just kind of think, oh. You know, I always turn my air conditioner on April 1st. I'm thinking, You know, I don't turn mine on until about middle of June or July, and then only when I need it. And as soon as I can, I shut it off and open the windows again. So unless you have, you know, pollen's an issue. You know, if you live out in the edge of town, you know, I know people that have dust problems because they live, you know, somewhere. And, you know, those things notwithstanding, there's a lot of people that could just open their windows.
We have a couple callers. Let's talk with them. Okay. First up, someone in Urbana, line number one. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
As it happens, this very day, I'm waiting for a salesman to show up from one of the local heating and air conditioning companies because I'm looking into, as I understand it, and I would like your comment on it, the efficiency of air conditioning systems has doubled roughly in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm contemplating, you know, if the payback numbers make sense, investing in the highest quality possible, the highest, you know, most efficient air conditioning system that is available. And I was wondering if you could give me any tips on what to ask for, what to look for, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And a second question I have is I'm also thinking I have some experience as I've been a draftsman and been involved in the construction trades over the years with heating and cooling system design. And I'm thinking of shifting because our winters aren't as cold as they used to be. I mean, I can't remember, I might be wrong about this, but I can't remember a sustained period where we had temperatures below 0 degrees Fahrenheit for more than 24 hours since the late 80s, maybe early 90s. But the summers do seem to be getting warmer, so I'm thinking of shifting shifting the design temperature for heating upwards a bit, say instead of 10 below zero to say zero, and shifting the design temperature for the cooling also upward a bit to compensate for, you know, the fact that in the future, with the way the climate is, the so-called climate change mm-hmm. is going on,
mm-hmm.
that our summers will or may, in fact, become much, much hotter and much more oppressive, and the price of energy, I think, is only going to go up. There's plenty of evidence that world oil production has peaked, and so, you know, the price we pay for a kilowatt an hour for power now and for natural gas now is going to look, you know, 10 years from now may look like the good old days, you know.
Sure.
So if I could have your comments, please, on those two points. Thank you.
You got an hour?
I got an hour?
I can go on. You set me up with all the good stuff, so
okay.
Thanks for that.
Well, let it rip. I'll listen to what you have to say. Thank you.
Okay, well, I would have helped to have a couple questions, but man, there's all the good stuff was right in there, so the caller knows what he's talking about. As far as the design temperature, I'll discuss what that means to folks that don't really that aren't in the mechanical trades, is that is the temperature that that's like the worst condition that you want to design or size the unit. So if you're going to get, you know, if you have a big leaky house, you're going to buy a big furnace. And what you do is you run the analysis based on a number that is like, what's the worst temperature you want to have this thing be able to handle. So generally in our area, we do like -5 Fahrenheit. And as you go from -5 Fahrenheit to -10 Fahrenheit as a design temperature, you start to really get into some big, because nothing can keep up. And during those periods, you know, it doesn't mean that you're going to shiver. It just means that your furnace is going to run the whole time and your air conditioner, if it's a really hot temperature above design, and you might lose a little bit of your household comfort for those periods. But then as soon as the temperature gets back into anything reasonable, you know, for 99.99% of the time, you're going to be fine. So it doesn't pay to just say, oh, I want to design for -20, because you'd wind up with a heating plant in your backyard the size of your house. So it doesn't pay to do too much with that. That said, to cover what that means to those of you of us buying equipment is you want to be fairly reasonable with those numbers. The other issue is that if you oversize a furnace, you're not really going to pay any major penalty if you oversize a little bit. So if somebody comes in and says you need, you know, X number, 80,000 BTU per hour furnace, and we can give you a 90 or a 70, you would probably want to err upward and say, give me the 90. You really don't pay much more for these different sizes. So you'd want to air upward. On air conditioning, it's the opposite. You want to air a little bit smaller, and the reasons get into the physics of how the air conditioner works and how well it will dehumidify, which is a lot of the job a lot of us really want in this climate, is the dehumidification. So you want the unit to run longer because it takes time to dehumidify. That fact gets me into the other part about buying the highest efficiency unit possible. And you got a sales guy coming, and I'd say go back. It's a trap, but you got to talk to him. So go ahead and do it. I'd like to arm you with what's important here. The key thing, the efficiencies of air conditioning units go from, I think the lowest you can buy right now is still a SEER, which is S-E-E-R. It's the seasonal energy efficiency rating. Go from a SEER 10 at the worst, which is way better than it was 6-7 years ago, up to, I think, SEER 19 now. And those are highly, highly efficient units. They're also highly expensive, and they get fairly complicated as far as how they run. There's multiple scrolls. There's multiple motors. They're pretty high-end. If you live in Phoenix, I'd go for it. But you don't live in Phoenix unless you're listening online. If you're local into the Midwest, you've got to really ask yourself an important question. Is I'm glad you want to be as efficient as you can, and that's a good thing. If you're looking at the numbers, if the numbers really matter to you, you're going to get more and more expensive for less and less gain. Number one is how many hours do you run the thing? For me, I bought a SEER 12. I've got a big old house. I got two air conditioning units. I bought SEER 12 units when I really shouldn't have, but I just kind of had to put my money where my mouth was a little bit at the time. I run my air conditioning less than 100 hours a summer, probably more like 50. So, you know, you buy all this efficiency. If you're never going to use it, the payback gets into the 30 or 40 year range, which is way longer than these units are going to last anyway. So, you know, be reasonable. It's kind of like saying, do you want to buy the most efficient car available if you're really just trying to save money on gas? If you're trying to do what's good for the environment and you have other altruistic things that are important to you, and I hope you do, then those are good reasons to go buy a Prius or something. But are you going to buy it if you're financially strapped and you're trying to save money over the life of the car on gas? The numbers don't bear out. So just a word of warning, there's a lot of other ways to save those dollars that make sense. So in this climate, you know, the SEER 11 and SEER 12 units, which are sort of the mid-range workhorse air conditioning systems, generally are going to work fine. Now, if you're going to turn it on April 1st, close the windows, and turn it off on November 1st and use it all the time, you're going to run that thing a lot of hours. Then it might make more sense to go for those a little bit higher efficiency. Another word of warning on the SEER 15, 16, 17, 19 now, those units, the way they're designed, at least this is the last research I did on them, it's been a little while, is those units are not going to achieve those efficiencies in our climate. Those are done, the way the testing is done, you know, it's like refrigerator testing and everything else. They have certain standards they do these to. The standards under which they do that do not always very well mimic the kind of behavior we have in our climate. Those kinds of things, you will see those efficiencies, and those things make more sense in climates that are arid, very hot, very arid, like the Phoenix kind of thing.
Because it takes a lot of energy to get rid of the moisture in the air. Is that
well, in our case, right, yeah. Because you get the moisture. And the other thing is the way these coils are designed, the most efficient units are not designed to run for long periods of time. They're also not designed to really be very good at water removal. Mm-hmm. They're designed with very narrow coils that have less pressure drop so that the fan doesn't work as hard. But you need more coils and more depth of coils for the humidification, for the physics of dehumidification to occur. So, you know, just because they might want to sell you a SEER 18 unit, and if you've got the money to pay for it and you really just want to do the best thing, be warned, you actually may not get the dehumidification you want from it, unless, you know, it's allowed to run. And then again, undersize a little bit. If you're going to turn it on and let it run, because it's going to take 20 minutes or so to hit its efficiency. And a lot of people's air conditioners are oversized for the furnace or for the air handler or for the house. They never run for 20 minutes. They're banging on and off and on and off. And it's like stop and go driving in town. Very, very analogous.
Okay.
So that, and the last thing I'll mention, because it's going to help, I think, everybody that's probably calling about this issue, is look at your distribution in your ductwork. Everybody neglects that. They go for the most efficient source, and then they maybe worry about insulating and things, all, both of which are great. The connecting thing in between is how you're going to make all this efficient cooling, and you want to deliver it. And you, after you deliver it, you want it to stay there. Everybody worries about that, but a lot of it's lost in the delivery. If your ductwork is bad, or if you got all these little details, you know, people have open ducts all over the place they don't even know about and don't even check on. Leaky ducts, ducts that don't connect, you know, blow into the wall and go right up the wall instead of blowing into the room. I've seen all kinds of stuff, like Jack said. So have your contractor just tell them, hey, how's my duct work looking, and how is, you know, is there any way we could seal that, make it better? How are the boots at the wall? Those are the key things. The little boot is the piece of metal that connects, that opens from the duct to fit the hole in the wall. You want to make sure that's sealed well. If you pull that register off and unscrew it, and it's 2 inches between the duct and the register, the air is going to want to go up your wall cavity and not into your room. And you're wasting a ton of good energy that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good. We have several callers waiting. We'll get right to them. I will just simply mention that I think the Prius is a really cool car.
It is. I want one.
Whether or not it makes sense for saving money with the life of the car, it is really a cool car.
They
I mean,
cool.
Especially the newer ones. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Okay. We'll go next to a listener in Danville, line number 4. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is about a powered roof vent. The original, I had a powered vent fan put in the original roof, and with no ridge vent. And then when that was re-roofed, I had it taken out with continuous ridge vents, and have gotten along very well. I have a very efficient furnace and air conditioner, but I'm entertaining bids now for the re-roofing, and it came, the one I am most inclined, came in with not only the continuous ridge vent, but a power fan installed, and I don't want to have another power fan installed. What would their thinking be on that?
Boy, good question. My first inclination is to say, ask them why. You know, the continuous ridge vent, as I understand, and this is getting a little away from where my best background is, but with that caveat, I'll just plow forward. You know, Bill Rose could be cringing on the other end of the radio somewhere. Sorry, Bill. Call in if you got any questions. But I think the continuous ridge vent seems to be the way to go. And you want to make sure that you have a place for the air to come in, or it's not going to go out.
I do have that.
So
yes.
if you're in good shape as far as your vents and soffit vents or wherever you're getting it, it's a nice sort of passive solution. You don't have to throw electricity at it or horsepower at it. So I would ask why they're considering doing that. They're probably considering doing that because they can add something more here to their bid for it. Other parts of the country where I've seen people that tend to need these because they might not be able to do it as effectively as we can because of hotter temperatures, longer year round or whatever. The ones that do make sense often have a small solar panel, a small photovoltaic panel that when you need it the most, which is when the sun is shining, is when they're there to deliver electricity and you don't have to really, pay for that. Pay for that power. The problem is they may run in the winter when you don't necessarily need them to. So anyway, I would say generally just check ask the contractor why they're doing that, because if you haven't noticed, if you've noticed that the ridge vent worked pretty well for you,
absolutely.
I would tell them say, hey, don't need it.
Okay, well,
you're a roofing guy. You're not a vent guy anyway.
Right. All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks so much. We're speaking about home energy during this hour, Focus 580, with Larry Lister, heating and cooling, a variety of issues pertaining to home energy and energy efficiency. Your questions are welcome. We have a couple callers waiting and time for others. The phone number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Next up, someone in Belgium, line number 1. Good morning.
Good morning once again, sir.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to bring up a topic. I don't have air conditioning in my shop, and when I go to places that I have to work in where there's air conditioning, I really don't enjoy it. It's not very comfortable as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do have is essentially a whole house fan. Pulls air in. and expels it. There's only just a very few days in the hottest part of the summer when that doesn't really, that works pretty good except for those really hot days,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you're aware of. And also, our Middle Eastern friends have learned this long time ago with the construction of their buildings that they don't even use electricity. They vent through the roof and it pull in through the lower ends and keep their places fairly cool until the advent of air conditioning, when they start air conditioning their homes also, like we do. But they live that way for a very long time. And I was wondering, in the past I had heard about a way to supplement this concept, and it seems to have totally disappeared off the radar screen. And I'm not sure I can exactly give a name to it, but let me describe what it is to it. You take a long tube, okay? You implant it under the earth someplace. In this tube, you inject pieces of pipe that have a wicking material in it and also a working fluid, so that you suck the air through the pipe. In the process, it exchanges heat from the earth to the air that's coming through.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you know the name for that particular system, because I'm sure it's been around, you know, people have talked about it. Whether it's, why hasn't it been gone farther? It seems that it has no moving parts except for the fan that pulls all the air through. Very efficient, very green. Can you give me any information about that?
Yeah, well, a little, but not much. It'd probably be worth digging into that a little bit more. Back when I used to work for the Army Corps of Engineers for years, and we worked with a lot of Army housing, and in the mid-80s or so, there was a lot of talk of and in the, even from the late 70s, there was a lot of talk, and people had done that. A lot of time it was sort of a whole house, you know, a green builder kind of, you know, homeowner did it himself sort of thing. And a lot of the main problem with that type of system is that you'd be bringing in, like in our climate, you'd be bringing in moist air, running it through the ground, and the condensation has to have somewhere to go because it's what's going to happen. And
well, that
even
the,
try as you might to get rid of it, it mold and must and things like that. And the one that I had seen, I actually had seen one of these systems in a home in, where was it? It was like down in southern Illinois somewhere. And you would walk in and the thing was running and it was bringing in coolish air because of the ground temperature. But I could barely stand to smell it. It was, you know, I'm not sure what had happened. Of course, the devil's in the details on these things, and there's probably a decent passive way to do it, although there's also fan energy involved because the more tubing or channeling you do through the earth, you know, you've got to throw enough horsepower at that to overcome the pressure differential of doing that, and you need a fair bit of it to be able to do for the heat transfer process to occur. The way that that's played out in modern day, that idea of using the ground temperature is through the ground source heat pump, which is does throw electricity at the issue, and it throws some equipment at the issue, and a working fluid being the refrigerant, but it is a pretty extremely efficient process.
Well, I've heard that system used too, also, sir. As a matter of fact, a neighbor right beside me happens to use the very system, and his working fluid period is water. He pumps the water down, mm-hmm. brings it back up through essentially like an air conditioning coil, and just pulls the air across that.
Mm. Okay.
Now, it doesn't get it as cold as an air conditioner does, mind you.
Yeah, and it won't dehumidify as well because he won't be able to get down too much below the dew point, depending on where he is and how deep he's going and whether he's using well water.
And this is a very deep-driven well.
Mm-hmm.
And pulls it up that way. So the water is at 50 some degrees, maybe.
Okay. So he's going to get some dehumidification.
Definitely.
From
and it seems like a very now it's expensive initially.
Yeah. It
but
is.
It does run for reasonable cost. I mean, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
not real bad.
The other issue you brought up in the earlier part of that is one that's is a real soft spot for me because the whole house fan.
Yes.
And I love whole house fans, and I love houses that are designed for them. And the problem is that not everybody, especially if you go to a lot of the new houses that they're building out, you know, in the cornfield houses and stuff, you go out there and they're building these gorgeous houses, but a lot of times from the energy perspective, they're just doing some really crazy, not very forward-thinking things. One of them being that you really can't put a whole house fan in there to allow you to really, what the, in commercial buildings they call it using an economizer, which is using cool outside air to cool the building whenever it's cool enough. And the nice thing about a whole house fan is that you, for those who aren't sure what we're talking about, it's the big fan that you would see mounted in the ceiling that when you turn it on, the louvers open up and it pulls air from inside your house, creates negative pressure inside your house. You open windows according to where you want your cooling, and it draws air, sucks air in from the outside, brings it through your screen and into your house, and then usually to the center of the house, to the core of the house somewhere is where you put the whole house fan, so that it draws evenly from all four walls in the house, sucks it out, puts it into the attic space, and then vents out whatever vents you have.
If I might point out, there's an improvement on that, sir. How I did it in my situation is I put it up so the only portion that shows in my house is just the louvers. The fan is up in essentially a large duct. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I took it up and I put it through the ceiling, and the fan is up there because you want to get the noise away from
it. Sure, sure.
If that causes a problem for a lot of people, and it caused a problem for me before I figured it out, but it is amazingly comfortable.
Yeah, my mother loves when I tell the story. I grew up in a house with a whole house fan. We used it a lot, and my bedroom was right near it, and it was the type that just mounts right there in the ceiling, and it got to where I think because you hear these things from youth. I just found it to be the most soothing thing in the world. It's like this white noise thing, and I go home to this day, and she never uses it anymore, and I'll make her turn it on. And go, oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
It's they're great, and whether that's a great idea, by the way, to be able to bring the fan, get the fan away from, or get the motor and the fan noise away from the interior of the house. But
it can be very disturbing, especially if it happens to be near the television set. It makes it impossible to hear television.
Oh, sure, yeah. And some of them are, like everything else, some of them are going to be a lot louder. Some of them are quieter than others. The newer ones I've seen tend to be louder than the old ones for some reason. Hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Nicole.
Thanks for the input.
Several callers waiting. We're past our midpoint here with Larry Lister. He's an engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering, and we're taking your questions on home energy, heating, air conditioning, et cetera. And we have several callers waiting and at least one line open, probably time for others. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. An Urbana listener next, line number two. Good morning.
Is that me?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, just with regard to the last thing you mentioned, it's much easier to retrofit a house with a whole house fan if you can buy the models that are whatever it is 20 and a half inches wide, so they'll fit between the trusses on 2 foot spacings. And it's very difficult to find those. You can't get them in any of the building stores anymore. The ones you buy are wider than that, and they require a lot of expensive framing to go around them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have any influence with the local Menards and Lowe's and Home Depot, it would be nice if we could start seeing those appear in the store again. At any rate, that's not why I called. My call has to do with this issue, once again, that you've mentioned several times in passing, and I think the other listeners would do well to think about this when they think about different ideas for cooling. We live in a place where the heat, that is central Illinois, the heat can sometimes be fairly oppressive, but it's usually the humidity that's the problem. And that raises some special issues for air conditioning. Oftentimes it will be too hot in the day, but then in the evenings it'll be cool, which is why these whole house fans are very nice, although I have to say that they do cause you to have to clean your house more often because they draw in a lot
of
stuff from the outside air. But I guess what I'm wondering is why no one makes an air conditioner that has a separate control for temperature and humidity and can do that by taking some of the waste heat and putting it back into the house somehow.
Well, unfortunately, the process of dehumidification is the same process that does the cooling. You just you subcool something and the moisture falls out.
And then you heat it back up again.
Most air conditioners.
That's how a dehumidifier works.
Yeah, most air conditioners don't heat it back up again. But yeah, you're talking about wanting to dehumidify without.
Well,
cooling.
A little cooling and a lot of dehumidification is what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Generally, I think the way that the process works, unless you're just trying to dehumidify like in a basement where you don't want any cooling, you know, under conditions where you don't want the cooling, is that by the time you're cool enough or too cool and you don't want to be cool anymore, generally there's not enough moisture in the air for it to still feel humid.
Right.
And that's generally how most people's bodies would react to that. Now, there are probably those that are a little more sensitive to the wind.
Well, I guess what I'm grappling with here is that there are times when the house feels uncomfortably warm and humid, and we find that we have to turn the thermostat down to about 68 or 67 in order to get the thing to kick on enough to dehumidify enough. Now, maybe we've made the mistake of oversizing, as you said earlier, but
you
I don't
did.
Think so. I think it was, I remember having the discussion with the guy that put the thing in, and he cautioned me against oversizing, and so according to him, it's not oversized.
Okay.
But
I mean, just by what you're telling me, by setting it down that low, by the way, you're not making it run any colder than it would otherwise. You're just going to make it run longer. But
right.
That's that process I was mentioning earlier that it takes a while to dehumidify.
Yeah, right.
And then once you've gotten the amount of dehumidification that you're looking for, generally you can cheat the stat back up.
Right, that's
And it tends to work a little better. That's just
kind of
a normal issue.
Yeah, there's another aspect of this that bears mentioning, and that is that if you have the house well sealed, it's not going to become more humid, except from opening doors and the people in it and releasing moisture, maybe some cooking. Whereas it will always acquire more heat if it's hot outside, just from the conduction through the walls.
Sure, and that's also dependent on how well insulated.
That's right. Yeah,
and it gets into the issue of insulation versus infiltration, which I'm always railing on when I come on the show, and we haven't done so much of that at this point, but those are two separate processes that need to be treated somewhat separately as well.
That's
because
right.
Infiltration is that ability of unwanted outside air to work its way indoors, and it does so through wind forces and pressure forces and temperature different forces that occur across our rather leaky house envelopes, and there are tighter houses and not tighter houses. But yeah, generally, you know, the sources of humidity in the interior, if you do have a relatively well-sealed house, is human respiration, is our breathing, and then any other sources of water that are occurring, whether it's, you know, just water that gets into the air through laundry use, through showers and so forth. And yeah, you just need to get rid of that.
But as you say, one critical issue here is the wind, and so perhaps in the summertime, Ed Kieser should give us a wind heat factor.
Yeah, we'll put Ed on that. I think I like that idea. We actually do have that comfort index now. It's a little bit, you know, they'll look at the humidity and say,
yeah,
hey, here's a. I'm always wishing that more of the weather forecasts in general would tell me the dew point. That's the key.
That's
to me,
right,
that's
yeah.
like the key.
Ed does do that.
Yes, he does, and that's a great reason to listen to WILL
right,
versus any,
yeah.
anywhere else in the country. You should listen to WILL no matter where you are, because you get that dew point.
Yeah, that's right.
One way to figure out, by the way, just that a lot of people use to figure out whether it's going to get, you know, when you're looking 5 days out, whether it's going to get less humid and whether your local TV weather bunny is going to tell you that kind of information or not, and say you don't have access to Ed or the guys over here, is look at the nighttime temperature, because at night it's going to approach the dew point at night. So if you see the nighttime temperatures going downward, you know, later in the week, for example, it's Monday, and you see them going downward later in the week, even if they don't tell you it's going to get less humid, it's going to get less humid. And that's one way, you know, sometimes when I do have my air conditioning running, I start looking, okay, when can I turn it off? And usually the metric I have to use.
Oh, good idea. All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks so much for the call. Several callers are waiting. We'll go next to a listener in Champaign, line number 3. Good morning.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Are you affiliated with any company, a business, or that people could call you?
Oh, boy. We get that question every once in a while. Yeah, yes. I mean, I just get calls usually through the radio station. They'll kind of route things to me or emails and stuff. But I don't do this for a living. My regular job keeps me quite busy, and that's doing more with large commercial buildings and things, you know, kind of on a more of a national scale. So this is just a fun little hobby I do in all my spare time.
Well, you sound very knowledgeable.
Oh,
that's why we wondered. Thank you.
Okay, but if you really need to, you can contact me through the station. A lot of times, it'll be something that I might know somebody else that could help you a little more readily, or put you in touch with somebody else. And sometimes I do that, but I usually do it only if somebody else can help you more than I can.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at the kind of buildings that you are working on. You know, for your your day job.
They're fun,
like the Pentagon, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
We have several callers waiting. We'll just carry on here. Next up, someone in Charleston, line number 4. Good morning.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to comment on the whole house fans we built here, sort of out in the country, about 14 years ago now. And I had the whole house fan in a place we owned before, and this one. And I had what I consider to be a problem of letting it run, and maybe it's because I let it run all night. Is that in times of high humidity, which is, of course, when I notice the heat the most, I get up in the morning and you actually find moisture condensation on the screens from that coming through. It almost looked like a filter that took water out of the air.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it just, things generally got a very significant, almost a literally palpable damp feeling to them after one of those nights, you know, fairly common around here, at least that time of the year anyway. And I was wondering if it's just something that you avoid by not running it all night, or if there's something else going on here, maybe one of those sets of circumstances that would recommend against using the whole house fan at those times. Just as an aside here, before you answer that, we also put a geothermal heating and cooling system in the house, which I would and have always come on very strongly about as an advocate for anybody who can do that and is building a new home. My whole house electric bill usually runs on a yearly average about $110 a month. And as I say, whole house, everything, dryer, stove, et cetera. But the heating and cooling aspect of it is something I feel very strongly positively about. So I'll let you maybe comment on both or either one of those.
Yeah. Well, on the whole house fan, That is an issue, and when I lived in a house not too long ago that did have a whole house fan, and I used it all the time, and I only noticed that, I'll bet, in the 6 or 7 years I was there, 5 years, 6 years, something like that, I think I did notice that, but I only noticed it once or twice, and it was on nights where the temperature and the dew point pretty much crossed the place they're not supposed to usually cross. And, you know, it was where it would get close to being like a foggy night or one of those mornings where you'd come out and there'd be dew. And, yeah, you've got moisture just looking for anywhere to go. It's going to go wherever it can because everything's dropping in temperature. So I think that's what's happening. It's an issue that I found would occur just very occasionally. And I would generally sometimes I would cool the house down until, you know, it depends on how late you stay up. I stay up late, so I would cool the house down. And by about 1 or 2 in the morning, if I was up that late, the house would be getting pretty cool at that point. It doesn't take long to subcool a house during the day, and then you can close it up during the day, and it stays cool all day long. So I would shut it off then. There wasn't a lot of times where I would run it all night. You can put it on a timer, or a lot of times it won't be an issue. So it's not a common thing. I don't find you may find differently depending on where you're living. On the issue of the geothermal source. Yeah, we're talking more and more about that every time I do the show, and that's the ground source heat pump that I refer to, and there's a few different industry names for it, but yeah, they're awfully efficient, and they used to be a little bit of a strange machine, and now they're just so prevalent, and they're getting quite robust, and they work well, and anywhere south of about our climate, they're a really good choice for new construction. It was interesting. I was talking to a realtor friend of mine up in the Chicago suburbs, and I mentioned that. And she said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, you know, the heat pump." And she said, "I'm not sure what you're talking about." And I said, well, here's the deal. And I explained it to her. She's been in the real estate business quite a while up there. And she's kind of saying, I don't think we have any of those up here. And you know, and I got to thinking, they probably don't. I mean, because the farther north you get, the less efficient they're going to do in heating and cooling. But she promised me she was going to keep her eyes open and see if she found any more up there. And she's going to be reporting back to me on that. So I'll know more, but yeah, those systems are great. They're efficient. They use some refrigerant, but they efficiently use the energy that's available in the earth, and that's great.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left with Larry Lister, engineer with Facility Dynamics Engineering, answering your questions about home energy, heating, and cooling, and a couple callers waiting. We'll I'm sure get them in, and hopefully others. 333-9455 around Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. An Indiana listener, I believe, is next on line number one. Good morning.
Hello. I sort of like reverse the thing in a sense. I'm going to go towards low-tech, and the reason I'm bringing this up is vacation time when you go to the cottage or the cabin or whatever. Some of them are out directly in the sun, and some of them are buried, you know, underneath tall pines, and it gets quite humid. I just wonder, you know, other than, you know, pulling the blinds on the south side and things like that, what other low-tech kind of things can a person do? I guess this would fit if your air conditioner went out one day or two, which has happened to me. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the places we're going to try to get, it's got ceiling fans, but that's it. And it's got windows and screens and doors, and that's it. And I was wondering what can be done, you know, sort of like help yourself during the day and in the evening also.
Yeah, great question. And these are all things that are good for any of us, by the way, even if you're sitting in an air-conditioned house, because when you start adding heat in ways that you don't maybe think about, you're going to pay for it. So, yeah, you mentioned ceiling fan or any kind of fans. Fans do not cool anything. In fact, they heat your house up, not in theory. They will heat your house up.
Because of motor energy?
Yeah, you got a motor running. Yeah. It's pulling, you know, 100 watts, and it's going to put 100 watts of heat into your house, whether you like it or not. Nothing you can do about it. However, the motion of air circulating increases transpiration from your body. You know, you perspire, whether you know it or not. That's the cooling effect, and it's quite... It's quite helpful, and it really makes a big difference. Most people with ceiling fans that just move air in their house, generally the research and on human behavior has shown that you can cheat the thermostat up about 3 degrees and feel the same degree of comfort. Mm. And 3 degrees is quite a lot if you're sitting out there inside your air conditioner. So moving air is one factor. The other one is don't create heat that you don't really need. The fan is going to create a little bit of heat, but that's heat that you need, and the benefits outweigh the penalty. In the case of lights, a lot of people burn lights during the day, whether they know they are or not, and lights are directly impact the amount of cooling you're going to get in your house. So don't turn lights on unless you absolutely need them, and only use what light you need. Other sources of heat in the house in the summertime. Well, the one that you can't really do much about is the refrigerator. Refrigerators kick out a lot of heat, so get your beer out of the refrigerator and put it in a cooler or something. Don't keep opening the refrigerator, because that's going to heat your house up a little bit more too. Other things like showers, you know, you take a hot shower, that's adding heat to your house. Mm-hmm. You know, heat and humidity. Which is going to increase the comfort. But, you know, keep the sun off of the surfaces of the house to the extent you can. You know, keep closing the blinds is good, unless it requires you to turn a light on. Then you're losing your trade-off there. But a lot of it is the sensible stuff. You know, don't overdress. Just keep the air moving. I think you basically kind of got it.
We have a house that has a southern... You know, a lot of sun on the south side. There's really no trees or anything else that's blocking that. And boy, it gets really hot.
Oh, yeah.
In certain areas. Would awnings help? I mean, anything to sort of block the solar energy from
coming
in the windows?
Yeah. If the sun's coming in, it's doing heat. It's dumping a lot of radiation and radiant energy into the windows. So yeah, awnings help a lot. Some people just plant vegetation to cool the surface, and it doesn't even have to be the windows, you know, just the surfaces of your house. The sun's hitting sun's hitting the side of your house, a lighter colored house isn't going to be as bad as a darker colored house. But the temperature, the surface temperature that's going to eventually set up as a result of whatever the outside temperature is and the solar energy hitting and how much of that there is and how much conduction is going through the wall, it's going to be warm. And your house, your inside wall just knows, I got a warm place that I'm exchanging energy with. And if you shade it, it's going to be more like the temperature of whatever the outside is versus, you know, 10 to 15, 20, 30 degrees hotter, mm-hmm. depending on. So like the white-colored roof movement in commercial buildings is is a big deal, especially out west where the heat is bad, because it really does make a difference. So yeah, that's a great question though.
Okay,
I like it.
Couple callers waiting. We'll go next to someone in Elwood on line number 2. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes.
Say years ago we used to dairy farm, and when we had a bulk tank put in, the fellow put in a in the refrigeration line. He put in a water-cooled radiator, like to cool off the refrigerant. And I just wonder if something like that is available and if it's practical, because it did make a difference.
Possibly. I don't know that it's practical in the case of like residential energy, and in commercial systems. What you're talking about is basically a water-cooled chiller, and those are the standard. So at the commercial scale at which things are built and installed, what you're suggesting is the common efficient way of doing it. And then they put a cooling tower out back around the roof, and you see these towers with sprays going over them, and you know sometimes you'll see the little plume from them. So that's what's going on there. So yeah, you're right. That's the way to do it. At the residential scale, it doesn't the economics of that don't really play out, because you have to get into water treatment and different things like that. So depending on how they did it, you know, like for a dairy process type thing like that, it might have worked out pretty well. But in theory, yeah, it's a great idea.
Okay. Thanks anyhow.
All right. Sure. Thanks for the call. A couple calls waiting. We'll try to get them both in the time remaining. Next up, an Urbana listener, line number 3. Good morning.
Yes. I was calling to ask you what you would recommend. We have a home that has a walkout basement, so it's somewhat earth sheltered on one side. And we're interested in converting it to living space, but we need to figure out how to heat and cool that area. Would you have any recommendations about what to do?
Boy, it would get into the specifics of you know, where your heating is right now, where your cooling is, and how to get it. Are you talking about the areas that the downstairs walkout and
yes,
the areas
the
that are...
walkout area, yes.
Okay, is the area near there cool, or is that whole level not...
The whole level is cool, because the heating or cooling doesn't go to the base.
Okay,
area.
So it doesn't. So there. So it's not being heated. So in the winter, it's probably a little
chilly.
A little chilly down there. Yeah, that would just be kind of a contractor type question, really. You may have the question would be, do you have enough ductwork? You know, could you get by adding new ductwork and distribution? And does your furnace have enough capacity to handle whatever that extra load would be? It shouldn't be too bad if part of it's earth sheltered, but if the other part is all sliding glass doors and windows, those can be kind of leaky. And so you'd have to get into that issue a little bit. There's other separate systems. You could add a separate system for that sort of thing as well.
I was thinking that's what we'd have to do, but yeah. Maybe we don't.
It kind of depends on the specifics of how you're ducted and so forth.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. We'll squeeze in one last caller, I think, in Urbana, line number 1. Good morning.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I do one quick question. Larry, did you used to have a couple of calls when you were in college?
Uh-oh. Yes, I did.
Well, I'm a voice way out of the past. My name's Mary Graham.
Oh.
We're your landlady.
Yes. How are you?
Lived on campus. But that's not the question.
How's Tony? No, forget it. Okay, we'll go on.
Okay. We're building a sunroom on a cabin out in the country that is not heated, and we're going to put windows all the way around in it. What kind of, what kind of glazing are we looking at here that would be adequate? Right.
Yeah, it's not heated?
No.
Okay.
Not in the wintertime. Well,
it's going to be now. You're going to have a lot of windows. The key things on these sunrooms and stuff is use the good glass to use is the, obviously the double glazed insulated
double glazed.
At a minimum, and you probably would want, if you're putting a lot of glass area up, you'd probably want the argon filled or some of these
argon. It's going to have a ceiling, so it won't have glass on the top. But okay, double
and
glaze.
And vertical glass is also the thing to do, unless you really want those roof windows. You're gonna add a lot of heat.
No, it's just gonna be straight like a room with a lot of windows.
Yeah, and then do a good job of insulating and sealing, and if it's an addition, add like a Tyvek wrap around there, and that you should be good to go. We'll call if you have any questions.
Okay,
it'd be great to hear from you.
All right, thanks. You
thanks.
Too.
Thanks.
Right,
thanks for the call. And of course, it does matter what direction the window is facing, doesn't it?
Sure.
I mean, especially the south. I mean, the south side of our house is so hot compared to the north side.
Yeah, the interesting thing that a lot of folks, just in the lay people, tend to not realize is what side of the house do you not want windows in the summer, mm-hmm. when you're trying to keep it cool?
Yeah.
Everybody would say the south. It's not true. The West is the
oh, is that right?
The West is the culprit. Yeah, I mean, and dig. If you think about it, the sun, the way the sun works in the summer is it's quite high in the sky. Now, if you don't have any overhangs or anything, you're going to get it on the south side during the day. But during the day, the sun's high in the summer.
Yeah,
when it's not high is when it's going down off to the west. And if you have a house that has a lot of west windows, at about 4 or 5 p.m., oh man, you just start cooking because the sun's dropped. And it's shining right directly into your window. There's no reflection or anything. It's coming right in. And the south side, a little bit of overhang protects you in the summer. And yet in the winter, when the sun drops in the sky, in the winter is when you do get that sun. And so the whole idea of passive solar design and passive solar houses takes into account the fact that as of about the equinox, you want the sun to stop coming in your house. And so you build and size the overhangs properly. To do that. Now, if your house has no overhangs or no shading, then the sun's just going to be bad no matter where it is. But you're better that you don't have a west-facing house that catches the sun than having a south-facing house.
Okay. We'll have to stop there. We're out of time. Larry Lister has been our guest. He's with Facility Dynamics Engineering. And as always, thanks so much for being here.
You bet. Thank you.